Our next case this morning is Olson against Northern FS. Mr. Haber.
May it please the court, my name is Andrew Haber. I represent plaintiff appellant Charles Olson. This is an age discrimination case, and Mr. Olson appeals from an order granting summary judgment to his former employer, Northern FS. Mr. Olson has 40 years of experience in the agricultural supply business, most of that in crop sales. In August of 2000, he asked his supervisor, his territory manager, Steve Keelan, about Mr. Olson's direction with the company. Mr. Keelan replied, "At your age, you're undesirable in the business world, regardless of your years of experience." Mr. Olson was 58 years old at that time. Within 4 months, Mr. Keelan interviewed Jacob Bloom without notifying Mr. Olson. At that time, Mr. Bloom was 22 years old and had no crop sales experience. Another month, Mr. Keelan gave Mr. Olson's job to Mr. Bloom and then terminated Mr. Olson's employment. The trial court did not find that Mr. Keelan's statement about Mr. Olson's age was evidence of discrimination. The trial court was wrong because the statement was direct evidence of discrimination, and even if it wasn't, it should have been viewed as evidence of pretext. It was direct evidence of discrimination because it was causally related to the adverse action, the replacement and termination of Mr. Olson. And also because it took place in a conversation about Mr. Olson's job. It was close enough in time to the adverse action because it occurred within about 4 months, it was causally related because it showed Mr. Keelan's propensity to evaluate Mr. Olson on the legal criterion, and it took place in a conversation about Mr. Olson's job. It was close enough in time because it took place in a relatively unbroken course of conduct which led to Mr. Olson's termination within a period of about 4 or 5 months. Even if Mr. Keelan's negative statement about Mr. Olson's age were not viewed as direct evidence, it certainly should have been taken into consideration as evidence of pretext. Northern FS's articulated reason for the adverse action is that Mr. Keelan claims that he did not know that Mr. Olson wanted to retain his job. Mr. Keelan claims that he told Mr. Olson to reapply for the job if he wanted it, but that's refuted by three witnesses, and one of them is another Northern FS manager. Viewed together, the statement about Mr. Olson's age and the fact that Mr. Keelan concealed that he was interviewing to replace Mr. Olson, there's sufficient evidence of pretext to defeat summary judgment. Also, the trial court mistakenly, incorrectly applied the fourth element of Mr. Olson's prima facie case and ruled that he didn't satisfy the fourth element because he did not show that Mr. Olson and Mr. Bloom were similarly situated. The trial court applied the wrong standard and, in addition, misapplied the standard that it applied. Under McDonnell Douglas, the plaintiff is replaced by another employee, he need only show that that employee that replaced him was substantially younger than he. If the plaintiff's not replaced, such as in a RIF case, then the burden is on the employee, the plaintiff, to show that a substantially younger, similarly situated employee was treated more favorably than the plaintiff. In this case, the court required Mr. Olson to show that he was similarly situated to Mr. Bloom and held that he wasn't, and in applying that standard, the court viewed as relevant factors which really weren't relevant. The court found that Mr. Bloom and Mr. Olson were not similarly situated because Mr. Bloom had an agricultural degree, grew up on a farm, and did an internship. And the court held, well, it's okay that Mr. Olson has 36 to 40 years of experience in crop sales, but it's up to the employer to decide that. However, the employer didn't decide that. Mr. Keelan and Northern FS never said that they preferred Mr. Bloom to Mr. Olson, and in fact, they admit that Mr. Olson was qualified. What they said was that Mr. Keelan never realized that Mr. Olson wanted to keep the job that he was already in. So in conclusion, Your Honors, we suggest that if a supervisor tells a man that he's too old for the business world, regardless of his years of experience, and the supervisor replaces him with a man that's 36 years younger, and the supervisor claims that the supervisor is not aware that the man wants to keep his job, we suggest it's error for a court to say that there's not enough evidence of age discrimination to go to a jury. Are there any questions, Your Honor?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Haber.
Thank you.
Mr. Bowell.
If it pleases the court, Steve Bale on behalf of Defendant Appellee, Northern FS Incorporated. The law in this area is fairly well established, so we have to concentrate on the facts. It is clear in this jurisdiction and in the country as a whole that in a discrimination case of this type, an employee may make a case of discrimination through one of two methods, that is the direct method or the indirect method. In this case, in preparing the motion for summary judgment, the defendants analyzed both methods. There is absolutely no dispute whatsoever under the direct method that the only evidence of discriminatory animus on the part of the employer is an offhand remark that was made in August 2000 to the effect that the plaintiff, Mr. Olson, at his age was not desirable in the business world.
Why is that an offhand? Just an offhand throwaway remark made by the decision maker?
In the context of the fact, Your Honor, what occurred at the time, taking the plaintiff's version of the facts as true, was that the decision maker had newly returned to the position after having left the employ of the company for some period of time, and Mr. Olson, the plaintiff at that time, was working in operations in a different job, having been put out of another job because of the fact that the company went out of that line of product, walked into his new supervisor's office and said, oh, by the way, what do you think my future is with the company, or words to that effect, caught him flat-footed and off guard, and they had some conversation about his future. At that time, he wasn't working as a crop specialist, and plaintiff talks about the intervening events in the next 4 to 5 months. Well, the key intervening event is that when, because of circumstances beyond the control of the employer, there was a sudden and immediate need for a crop salesperson, a crop specialist, it was the plaintiff that was asked by the decision maker to fill that position, at least on a temporary basis. And there is other circumstantial evidence of record, for example, the age of the decision maker. There is other evidence of the lack of context for the remark, the lack of proximity to the ultimate decision to put somebody else permanently into that crop sales position. There are numerous other factors which all weigh toward making that remark neither temporally or causally related to the ultimate decision not to keep Mr. Olson permanently in the crop sales position.
Well, I mean, it seems to me like a good argument to make to the jury why it should exonerate your client from age discrimination, but that's a pretty powerful statement made by a decision maker. It's relatively close in time to...
It is.
Yeah.
It is on its face a stray remark. There is no other evidence, and this court has held, for example, in the Kennedy decision, that a stray remark by the decision maker, which was, I would say, equally as egregious, made 5 months before the adverse decision, standing alone, does not satisfy the standard under the direct method. In other words, it is not sufficient to prove discriminatory animus standing alone, that a finder of fact would not have to draw any other inferences or look to any other facts in order to determine that age was a substantial or determinative factor in making the adverse employment
decision. Why should it be viewed standing alone?
Because it is the only remark. It is the only evidence
in this case. It may be the only remark.
I would submit that it is the only evidence of any kind of discriminatory animus, circumstantial or direct, in that...
You don't find it odd that a salesman who had been successful for an extended period is replaced and fired without even being told what's up?
His firing and his replacement are two discrete events.
So you say. A jury might infer otherwise.
A jury, if we got to the McDonnell Douglas or burden shifting method of analysis, and it got that far, I suppose that it would. But that brings us to the second step of the analysis, the indirect method, the McDonnell Douglas burden shifting method, under which the prima facie case needs to be proved. And then you get to this idea of the fourth element, which was the only element, by the way, that was at issue in the court below.
The Supreme Court keeps warning people against viewing this prima facie case business as if it were part of the statute. It's not in Title VII. It's not in the ADA or the ADEA or, this long list. It's a means to help structure a decision, but it's not a prerequisite. And one other way of winning is to raise an inference that this behavior is very suspicious. It's hard to understand if age or, one of the other categories didn't play some role. And that's why I was asking this question. How is the employer's behavior easy to understand if age played no role? Taking all the evidence in favor of the plaintiff, and that evidence includes the fact that he was replaced and fired with no warning whatsoever, no opportunity to show his own ability, and replaced by a Dumkopf.
I would take issue with the court on that. He was replaced by a qualified individual. There's no dispute that the individual who took over the job on a permanent basis was, in fact, differently and as qualified, if not more so. So
most businesses would view 40 years of success as more indicative than a recent academic credential. And the fact that this business appears to have believed otherwise, to its injury, as it turns out, since the Dumkopf didn't last long, might raise an inference that perhaps age played a role.
Well, I don't think that what happened after the hiring is relevant whatsoever. It's what the employer knew at the time the decision was made. And second, I would point out
what he knew at the time of the decision, what the employer knew at the time of the decision was that Olson had been a success, and the potential replacement, the 22-year-old, was a chance, right? You don't... In contract bridge, people who play for tops and bottoms usually lose. You play the percentages, not for tops and bottoms, if you know what that analogy is.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor. And what I would point out here is that we use the honest belief. In other words, as long as the reason, the employer's reason, is honestly held, whether it's mistaken, stupid, is irrelevant.
That's a perfectly good defense of trial. We're just trying to figure out whether there was enough evidence.
In this case, Your Honor, there is no evidence to suggest, and now we've moved all the way to the burden shifting and the pretext and offering.
All of that burden shifting, McDonald, it all falls out once you go to trial.
Except that in this case,
whether there was age was a motivating factor in the decision that was made.
There is no evidence to go to a jury to suggest that the employer's proffered reason, and that is, we didn't know he was interested in the job. We were pretty openly interviewing people. Everybody else, including the fellow that was sharing the territory with him, knew that we were looking for a permanent replacement. This other manager, Jeff Kimmel, knew we were looking. We were interviewing people in the office next to him.
That was not public knowledge, that it was never posted, that no one ever told him, although they surely had to know. I mean, this just looks like a contested issue of fact.
I would beg to differ, only because I would say there is nothing to suggest that the decision maker didn't believe he knew. So I would beg to differ, and I go back to the under the existing jurisdiction of the Seventh Circuit. There's really no evidence that supports the direct method. Under the burden shifting analysis, the similarly situated, it becomes a distinction without a difference, because if he's similarly situated or not similarly situated, you don't go to the burden shifting. But on burden shifting, if you can show that the employee that replaced is as or more qualified, there's no pretext. So I would simply offer that the judgment of the district court in this case was correct and should be affirmed. And we'll take a seat unless the court has any other questions.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further? Ms. Haber?
Just want to make the comment that it's very hard to give the employer credibility for an honest belief following a remark that at your age you're undesirable in the business world regardless of your years of experience. And Mr. Keelan did go out and recruit Mr. Bloom, and yet there's evidence to show that he did not tell Mr. Olson that if he wanted to keep the crop sales job that he would have to apply for it. So I think there's sufficient evidence of pretext, and we ask that the district court be reversed. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.